Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Transit Authority, the official podcast of the American Public Transportation Association. My name is Linda Ford, and I'm the General Counsel at ACTA. I am delighted to introduce a great program in store for you today in honor of Black History Month. I'm particularly excited to introduce our guests from Sound Transit, which is based in Seattle, Washington. Joining us is Peter Rogoff and Jonte Robinson. Sound Transit has an anti-racism strategic plan in place and is a signatory to ACTA's Racial Equity Commitment Pilot Program. Our first speaker is Peter Rogoff. Peter is the Chief Executive Officer for Sound Transit and has been for the last 6 years. Under Peter's leadership, he helped design the largest transit expansion program in America, and he sharpened the agency's focus on sustainability and improving riders' daily experiences while advancing equitable access to transit and affordable housing. Peter's legacy at Sound Transit includes applying his deep federal experience to help secure critical funding for the Seattle region, and he has also ushered in reforms to bring about a more collaborative, disciplined, and informed annual budget process for Puget Sound taxpayers. Before joining Sound Transit, Peter served as the Undersecretary for Policy at USDOT, as well as the Administrator for the Federal Transit Administration. He also spent 22 years as a professional staff for the Senate Committee on Appropriations. Welcome, Peter. Peter will be speaking with Jonte Robinson, who is the Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at Sound Transit, where she oversees the agency's equity, inclusion, and culture, equal employment opportunity, Title VI and disadvantaged business enterprise, and small business programs. A few of her key priorities include leading Sound Transit's anti-racist strategy, which is focused on economic development opportunities, career development, community partnerships, and accountability. Jonte, it is wonderful to have you join us today. So, Peter and Jonte, I know you have several questions for each other. So, Peter, the floor is yours to kick us off.
Thanks, Linda. We really appreciate being invited onto the Transit Authority podcast, and it's great to have this opportunity to talk with Jonte, who I talk to all the time, but it's great to have a public conversation. Jonte, Sound Transit, I think, may have been one of the first, if not the first agency, to sort of augment its diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy with an anti-racist strategy. From your perspective, why is that important, both as a transit authority, but also as an entity here in the Puget Sound region?
Well, thank you for that question, Peter. And I think that, you know, to answer that question, we have to really just understand the foundational principles of diversity, equity, inclusion, and now even belonging. And the fact that, again, you know, those elements are very foundational in an organization. First of all, to ensure that an organization has representation specific to employees and even the businesses that they utilize. But also from the equity perspective, ensuring that there's processes in place to ensure that policies, practices, and procedures don't have disparate impacts on certain groups of individuals. When we look at diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's ensuring that voices are heard, celebrating cultures, creating a workplace where people can bring their whole self to work and thrive, ensuring that folks don't have to worry about whether or not they're accepted and they don't have to assimilate. I know it may seem like I just said a whole lot because I probably did. And what I just said should be enough. You know, people may think that should be enough for organizations, but it's not. Even as an organization that may do all of those things related to diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, there's still going to be a lack that's there because it's not addressing the systemic issues. It hasn't addressed the root, as I often like to talk about. And you know me, Peter, I'm always giving examples and illustrations. And when I think about the difference between having an anti-racist strategy versus a diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy, I think about a tree. And, you know, you can chop down a big old cedar tree. You can get rid of all of the debris. You can even try planting something else in that space. But if the root isn't pulled up, it's going to grow back again. And that is why organizations have to do anti-racism work. Because when we do anti-racism work, we are addressing systemic issues that have been in existence for hundreds of years. And so when you look at what Sound Transit has done, our anti-racist strategy, which, you know, we made sure that we looked at it through that transit lens, it's there to identify and eliminate harmful policies, systems, and structures that have disproportionately harmed people of color. So it's very specific in what we're looking at and what we are addressing. So that's what I would say the difference is. And then looking at transit, transit is a tool. I won't say vehicle because it'll sound like, you know, a play on words, but it definitely is a tool to ensure that people have access to opportunities. And so it's very, very critical that we are ensuring that the groups of individuals who have historically not had access to opportunities has access to those opportunities. And I'll stop there.
Well, thanks for that, Jonte. You know, I think it really all centers around systemic racism. What's embedded? What is, as you alluded to, what has taken root in our systems, including things that we may not even be cognizant of, but we've been made cognizant of in the conversations that have happened in recent months and years. This is also one of the most difficult things to discuss with employees, the whole issue of acknowledging past wrongs and acknowledging problems that are systemic. So how would you describe what the experience has been in terms of daylighting this strategy and getting buy-in from the broadest universe of our employees?
You know, it's been an interesting journey, and people are on different places as it relates to this journey. When I talk about this type of work, I talk about it from the perspective of being on a journey, because this is not something that we're going to be able to correct overnight. It has taken us hundreds of years to find ourselves in this space that we're in. And it's going to take us years and years to truly come out of it. At Sound Transit, I would say that we were in a place due to the murders of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor, where I believe we were open to it because of the pain that our Black employees expressed during that time. Peter, you and other executive leaders participated in listening sessions, and you were able to hear the pain of our employees, not only related to those situations that happened that impacted our nation, but also hearing their stories of how they had been impacted personally at Sound Transit. And I think that those conversations really open people up to want to do better, to want to embrace change, to want to embrace organization transformation. And so having that solid commitment from executive leadership was the first step. As we have been rolling out this work and engaging in these conversations, I would have to say that the majority of our staff are open and are ready to help us move the work forward. Of course, there's individuals who don't have a true understanding of what it means when we talk about anti-racism work. Because when you talk about anti-racism work, of course, you have to deal with the concept of white supremacy culture. And when you start talking about white supremacy culture, it makes some people feel some kind of way, because the first thing that typically pops into people's mind is the KKK or some white supremacist extremist group. But when we talk about white supremacy culture here at Sound Transit, we're talking about a form of racism that's centered on ideas, thoughts, beliefs, and actions that white people are superior to people of other racial backgrounds. And so we're not talking about the violence, we're not talking about those different things, but we're talking about how this culture shows up in our organization, specifically through standards of professionalism, you know, that reflect dominant culture norms and beliefs and values. And so, again, across the board, I would say that staff are on board, but of course, there's a group of individuals that don't understand. And so that's why our office, the office that I lead, is working really, really hard to ensure that we are educating people on what we mean when we say anti-racism and white supremacy culture.
I have found that for me, the most educational conversations I've had on this is just in talking with employees of different backgrounds and hearing their stories, hearing their career paths, hearing their what educational opportunities they didn't have, what stresses, financial or otherwise, exist in their life experience, and comparing those with those of myself, my own family. It's been an eye-opening experience. It's just a conversation worth having that a lot of people, I think, sometimes don't have. Getting back to the whole diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy, you know, we have six core values here at Sound Transit. It's been critically important, an agency that's growing as quickly as we are, both in staff and in the breadth of our system, to have those six core values and remind everybody why we're here and what guides our work. One of them is inclusion and respect, and the other one is passenger focus. When you combine those things, you know, it's been our goal to have passenger-related issues addressed in an equitable way. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about that challenge and talk a little bit about what we've accomplished in terms of trying to address the passenger experience with an equity lens.
Right. So, you know, again, from a systemic aspect, there's this reality that certain individuals haven't had access to our system or equitable access, whether it's individuals who may have disabilities, whether it's people of color who were disproportionately impacted by our fair enforcement practices. There's just a reality that there are certain groups of individuals who didn't necessarily have the same passenger experience as other groups of people. And even, you know, how our work has impacted an affected community, gentrification. I mean, and this is not just specific to Sound Transit. This is nationwide. Any transit organization deals with these things that we're talking about. And I am so proud because this is a very recent development. As you know, Peter, we just rolled out our racial equity tool. And this tool is, I'm not going to say it's going to work miracles, but this tool definitely is a game changer as it relates to how we do business and how we ensure that our passengers are getting, as I would say, excellent service across the board, ensuring that our community has a seat at the table and has a voice. But we just rolled out our racial equity tool, which was designed to be both a product and a process. And this tool is going to guide teams through conversations, analysis. So this racial equity tool, when we designed it to be both a product and a process. And this tool is going to guide teams through conversations, analysis, and practical application of racial equity principles and concepts across a variety of scenarios. What we've come to realize is that by really understanding how systemic and institutional racism intersects with our efforts to build a best-in-class transit system, we can better assess potential negative impacts and advance equity for communities of color, as well as historically excluded groups. In addition to this racial equity tool, we've also developed an equitable engagement tool, which again is going to help us center and focus equity in our engagement practices, which is going to enable us to center community voice and ensure that community has full and meaningful inclusion and representation, populations who've been historically underrepresented. So these are just a couple of many efforts that we're doing, steps that the agency is taking that's in alignment with our anti-racism strategy, embedded in our values and our goals, and also aligned with our strategic priorities.
Yeah, I would echo that and add two examples. You know, when we started talking about rolling out the racial equity toolkit, I think a number of the different project teams, we've got multiple expansion projects going in different directions. Some looked at it somewhat askance and wondered whether it was going to derail or redirect the whole planning process in ways that they couldn't really fathom. And in a very short period of time, it went from that dynamic to one where each of the project teams were competing to be the first pilot because they were really interested in doing it. And now, we anticipated rolling this out in a pilot fashion and then having it move slowly to the other projects. And now they all seemingly want to embrace it simultaneously and get to work. So that has been a real positive example. A lot of it is just demystifying what the it is and letting people see it and understand what it is and what it isn't and how it really helps them do their work. The other, as you know, Jonte, is we had to go through a very painful process, painful for our community and painful for our board of directors in terms of scaling back some of our expansion plans and pushing off some of the investments that the voters already approved because of the challenges with both revenues and growing costs. And your team was able to bring some racial equity data to their decision-making in terms of which projects would be impacted more or less by those decisions. And that strongly influenced the board into the decision-making they made. You know, a few years ago, we wouldn't have really brought those data points to the table. So it's really been a very positive experience in a short period of time. I did want to talk a little bit about APTA's racial equity commitment pilot program. We are a signatory to that, and one of the year one deliverables is to conduct a climate assessment. And I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about how we approached the climate and share some of, you know, the high level results of what we found in our own work.
Yes. So one of the things that was very exciting about being a signatory with APTA's racial equity commitment, and this is actually, you know, shout out to you, Peter, is we've already been doing this type of work. So this, you know, wasn't new to Sound Transit. And so we've done several climate assessments over the last few years. Since you've become the CEO of Sound Transit, the Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion has always collaborated with human resources to ensure that we had diversity, equity, and inclusion questions embedded within our employee engagement survey. But we've stepped it up a couple of notches where last year we actually had two climate assessments that we conducted with employees. One was a diversity, equity, and inclusion survey, which was very much focused on our diversity efforts, our equity and inclusion efforts. So that was hiring targets, you know, information about our employee-led groups, which have had a huge positive impact on our culture. And then after that, when we begin to seek feedback about our anti-racism efforts, we also did a climate assessment that was very specific to Sound Transit's commitment to becoming an anti-racist organization. And both of those assessments, the data told us the story that employees felt strongly. They believed that the executive leadership team was on board, was committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion work, was committed to becoming an anti-racist organization. But there's always been this concern about whether or not our mid-level managers had the same level of commitment as the executive leadership team. Some other questions or concerns that came out of this climate assessment was whether or not we had the resources to really push this work forward, and were we really willing to do all that it takes to move the work forward. Those were the two probably highest comments that we received as it relates to the two surveys that we conducted last year.
Let's take a moment for a short break and then continue our conversation with our guests.
Come to Washington, D.C., March 13th through the 15th to advocate for your organization and the public transportation industry. Your voice is needed at APTA's 2022 Legislative Conference to support important federal legislation and policy initiatives. Join us in person in Washington, D.C. Register today at APTA.com.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Transit Authority. I am joined today by Peter Rogoff, CEO of Sound Transit, and Jonte Robinson, Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at Sound Transit.
Peter, thank you for those great questions. And in fact, now I have a few of my own questions for you. Related to our anti-racist strategy, there's a commitment to CEO and executive support. Can you talk a little bit about how you are supporting the strategy and what other actions have been taken to show commitment?
Sure. Well, you know, it's always important to remember that the CEO of an agency like ours, first and foremost, is a mouthpiece. It's a mouthpiece to the community, but also a mouthpiece to our own employees. So an important part, I think, of what the CEO's role is to just continually give this voice and also communicate both to employees and the community that it is not a flash in the pan, a passing fad, something that's going to come and go. And just as it was front of mind when we had protesters in the streets after the murders of George Floyd and other victims, it's not something that we are only half-hearted about and will turn our attention to other things with the passage of time. The more one voices that to the community as well as the employees, the more the strategy can take hold and become part of our regular processes.
And I know this because, of course, I was here for it. But in 2020, when we dealt with the murders of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor, you were very instrumental in giving us space to participate, take time off of work to participate in the marches, you know, the blog post that Sound Transit posted to show our support during that very, very tough time. You also stepped out during those very, very troublesome moments and made the commitment for Sound Transit to become an anti-racist organization. Why was that so important to you?
Well, I think it goes back to why I'm in this industry. You know that my background before coming out to Sound Transit was with the federal government, both working in Congress for many years and then working at FTA and then working in the Secretary's office as Undersecretary. And transit is a very special place in the world of transportation writ large, in that it was, you know, the federal role in transportation is born out of the Public Welfare Clause of the Constitution, not the Interstate Commerce Clause. You know, UMTA, the antecedent of the Federal Transit Administration, was developed as part of the Great Society programs in the 60s, in which the goal was at the time to eliminate Black poverty. And transit was an affordable mobility back then was thought to be essential to that goal. It's still essential to that goal. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, we have such a more robust built out civil rights function within transit agencies than you will in highway departments often. So there is an element about being in this industry that is part of a larger movement. And it's, you know, one of the reasons why after working in all modes of transportation for many, many years, sought to focus on transit. So I just think it's a natural extension of what we do here. And it is particularly important in the Puget Sound region. This has been an area where Black communities especially have shrunk within the city of Seattle because of housing affordability. The issue, communities of color have been among those that have been cut in half through the construction of the interstate system, something we've seen in other parts of the country, but was certainly true here. And one in which the community is diversifying rapidly while also getting displaced rapidly. So I just think it's important for an agency like ours, especially one that is expanding transit service, to be mindful of these racial equity issues as we expand them, and also be mindful of the impacts we have on communities when we do expand. I mean, gentrification, when we introduce light rail into communities, is a fact of life. It's one of the reasons why we have a very aggressive, if not the most aggressive, transit-oriented development affordable housing program, where we really try to facilitate affordable housing adjacent to our stations. So people who are living in those communities now can actually stay in their communities once the light rail is built and actually enjoy the service that they've been paying taxes to build for many, many years. So that's just, you know, part of the goal here, but it's also certainly part of why it's important to me personally.
And again, because I've been with the agency a little bit longer than you, I know that we did not have a diversity, equity, inclusion. Certainly, we were not having conversations about anti-racism prior to you becoming the CEO of Sound Transit. And we can't end this discussion without acknowledging that you're leaving Sound Transit at some point by the end of May. What do you hope, as our still current CEO, to accomplish from a DEI perspective and anti-racism before you leave? And any advice you would like to offer other agencies as they embark on this journey?
Well, I think what's really important is that you not let this mission and this focus only be embedded in one department. Yes, we have a Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion department. You are the head of it and are doing an outstanding job. But as you know, for this work to really take hold, the mindset of that agenda needs to be embedded in every department and everything they do. And it should not be the Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion Office's job to have to wave the flag every time and remind people to bring an equity lens to the work they're doing. I think we've been very successful at that. You know, I think the goal here is to embed the mindset, and then I think everything flows from that to be making those questions routine in our daily work as we make, you know, policy choices, but individual just daily programmatic choices. Where are we going to stick a staging area? Who are we displacing when we do that? Are we going there because that's the most affordable piece of property, or are we going, you know, or do we have to be mindful of the fact that that piece of property may also be the only affordable housing in an 8-square block area, and that, which is why it is less expensive than neighboring parcels. It's that kind of thing, is getting the mindset embedded in it across the agency, that I think is important. And one of the things, the extent that that work is not done, I'm certainly going to try and get that done in the weeks I have remaining.
Thank you, Peter.
We are just about out of time, but before we say goodbye, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Transit Authority, APTA's official podcast. And of course, I want to say a special thank you to Peter Rogoff and Jonte Robinson for taking the time to join us today. Thank you all.